Welcome to MGO Podcast 13.14. Never in the history of this podcast has been the .14 podcast been about a football game, but here we are. So, European soccer has a couple of things on American sports. Number one, of course, is the lack of commercials. Mm-hmm. Stipulated. Mm-hmm. But the second thing is, like, these places, you go to them, and people just sing. They sing their balls off. They have, like, their special song, like Liverpool has You'll Never Walk Alone. I think Manchester United does Wonderwall.
I would not have brought Wonderwall as like the number one thing. Like Arsenal's got a cool song, like, and they've got Safe for Work.
I don't think
songs.
They actually do Wonderwall. It's just
no, but they have Safe for Work songs. They have not Safe for Work songs too. So
right?
They have,
yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Different
like,
versions of the
Chunder Your Bollocks, McGillicuddy, or whatever British stuff they're doing is. But yeah, you know, there's the World Cup, and whenever England plays, there's this band that is just doing nothing but playing the chorus of September by Earth, Wind, and Fire, and it's awesome, and then you're annoyed by it, and then it's awesome again, and there's just this sort of, like, vibe that doesn't really happen in American sports until
Vuvuzelas?
The fourth quarter of yesterday's game when, I mean, I didn't go. I just was going to go to the hockey game. I went to the basketball game. It was just like it didn't go. So I'm watching it on TV, and all of a sudden you can barely hear the announcers because the stadium is singing Mr. Brightside apropos of nothing.
Yes.
They are not playing it in the stadium, and every Michigan fan there is belting it out. Like the guy three rows behind me six games ago who I really disliked, except this time I liked it. And Patrick got a video of Michigan fans doing the same thing with the Pump It Up song.
Right.
Again, apropos of absolutely nothing. Nobody is playing this song. It's just 35-3 or whatever, and people are losing their minds because Michigan is about to win the Big Ten title for the first time since 2004. And you just feel this outpouring of joy in a way that you have to have gone through this desert to really understand.
Yeah. No, I completely agree, and I think I put that kind of sentiment into the pre-Ohio State thing where, like, come on, guys, it's our turn to feel this way, because if you see the Alabama fans and the Georgia, and, like, the Alabama fans just can't get into anything short of a championship. Like, even destroying Georgia the way they did, you'd be like, okay, that should make them happy, but, I mean, they've been there so many times, it's, like, just a relief. And, like, if Michigan keeps winning, if Michigan does this for 10 years, we're going to be like that, too. So I don't think that you can have that same one again. Like, the closest thing in my lifetime I can remember to this is, I know you're not a big baseball fan, but I was a huge Tigers fan as a kid. And Tigers went through a huge drought, and they were terrible, and I was still into them and still really following them all through the 2000s. And then they had that 2006 World Series season that nobody saw coming out of anywhere. And people still remember those teams, even though even that team didn't win a championship, but that team was better than many of the other teams since then. It just, that first team, the first one that gets you over the hump again, that makes you believe again, that just becomes such a special, like the 69 team kind of established the whole Bo era. And that team wasn't as good as the 73 team or the 74 team or the 75 team, but it was the team that got you to believe again after you'd been in the wilderness for so long.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing that really stood out during these previous Ohio State games that, you know, you'd go to is that there's a large, like, just sort of faction of the Ohio State fan base that is just miserable. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just miserable people. And so I remember particularly there was one year where they came in and, like, Damon Arnett was their third cornerback, and Michigan completed a slant on Damon Arnett. And these guys, a couple of rows in front of me, like, looked at each other and they were like, Damon Arnett! And then they proceeded to kick our ass, but they were still right. So mad about Damon Arnett. And even the way that they celebrated was more about how miserable they were sort of inside themselves. And there is a guy like that. There were two guys like that at the game who just started off talking a bunch of stuff and then just sort of stewed until it was over and was they were out of there instant. Ohio State fell down 15. They were gone for the final score because they couldn't. But just their whole vibe was just this sort of entitlement, expectation kind of thing. And, you know, Nick Saban kind of goes off about it.
Right. in his Nick Saban, woe is me, like, they're not professionals. Well, I'm like, your guys are a little bit more professional than the other guys.
And there's kind of like an eye rolling, like, okay, Nick, like, let's be real about this. But he's not entirely wrong.
No, like, he's responding to their fan base, yeah.
Well, yeah, so like if there's any fan base where it's just like this is amazing, I mean, we're not going to win it every year, but things are okay, it should be Alabama. Mm-hmm. And like, what's one thing that I really appreciate about Michigan basketball fandom is like, yeah, they're not going to live up to expectations this year, right? But, you know, it's all right.
Yeah. Like, well, we went through the Karras year, right? Like Michigan, they popped down again after being up top, and it's not like we're not yelling at them because they didn't make it back to the national championship after they go to the national championship.
Well, yeah, it's just, you know, there's more expectations for Michigan basketball than there ever have been before, but you don't see that sort of entitlement, I think, creep in. Like there were a couple of guys after the UCLA game who were just like, oh man, they're just kind of that thing. But the overwhelming feeling was just like, oh, this team.
Yeah.
And even though, you know, they're 5-3 now, they just got a very important win against San Diego State, but it looks like they might be headed for the bubble. It's been tough, but you know, you're not seeing the kind of like, this is unacceptable rhetoric and that kind of thing. And so I hope we as Michigan fans are able to hold on to this, even if this continues, which I really hope it does.
I mean, we believe it can. I mean, there was a long point in all of the, even in the winning and even like after we beat Ohio State where I was asking myself, like, do I really believe Michigan could go down to Columbus and win next year? That's just kind of creeped up in the last week or so where it's like, well, you know, they're going to the playoffs. I don't know how good their recruiting is going to be, but their recruiting's been pretty good. Their development's been pretty good. If they can hold on to the staff, like, I don't see why they can't beat a team that they crushed this year, next year. Like, that's why am I even worried about that? And
no, it's all right. I just wanted to get to our lovely sponsors. The MGO podcast is sponsored by Underground Printing. Rishi and Ryan have been our biggest supporters from the start. They have 3 retail locations in Ann Arbor and offer thousands of University of Michigan athletic products. Check out UGP Michigan Apparel and find our stuff at mgoblogstore.com. We have new stuff up. We have 42-27 related stuff. We have chair related stuff. We have playoff related stuff. We have all kinds of stuff that you would like to consume and add to your wardrobe. We also want to thank all of our associate sponsors, Peak Wealth Management, Homeshare Lending, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, Signal Wire from the Cheap Seats, which is a Scarborough's podcast, Team Fan Club, and Prentice 4M, which we are not at currently, again, because of COVID lockdown, which is fun. All right, 42-3 over Iowa in a game that was closer than that, I think, spiritually. Like, it wasn't a huge blowout until the fourth quarter. There were some pretty nervy moments, particularly early, but Michigan gets 2 huge plays. The longest pass and the longest run that Iowa has given up all year are back to back. One is the McCarthy package,
right,
where it's a handoff to Blake Corum up the middle. Iowa doesn't fit it right. And Corum makes a great jump cut to turn 10, 15 yards into a bunch. And then J.J. McCarthy comes screaming in from off screen, passing Blake Corum at some point, and then sort of, I don't know, doing some sort of interpretive dance that gets a couple of Iowa guys to fall down. And you're just like, what the hell?
What are you doing here? It was like a cartoon because, like, Iowa's players are running full speed for Iowa players, and like Michigan's trying to get downfield, and then just like he's like a superhero, like kind of like jogs up, like, out, like, hey guys, what are we doing? Oh, we're blocking. Okay, well, oh, Sainistil's got that guy. I'll just put my arms out.
Well, and like I think that he was able to like actually impact the play. I think that
Yeah.
without his intervention, that's probably not a touchdown. And I it's one of the most baffling things I've ever seen on a football field, because you'd think if a guy could run like that, you'd know about it, right? Like he's obviously got some talent as a runner, but that sort of flat out speed is just like, I want to see him drop a snap against Western Michigan just to see what happens.
I want to
So
try the Transcontinental against him or with him. Like, doesn't even
that's
need
not
the.
even that. I mean, it's kind of a waste, honestly. I'd rather run it with McNamara,
Well,
because I mean, if
I mean,
John
McNamara
DeVore
with
can
the
score on the
blockers.
Transcontinental,
Yeah, McCarthy
then you
without the blockers. Just have
should.
the quarterback hanging out there. Sneak him out of the field. Well, we already used. You can't change his jersey number to 12, unfortunately, but.
So Corum does a great job there to take advantage of one mistake from Iowa. The package gets McCarthy out to the edge and draws a defensive end who cannot recover in time. So they've evened up the numbers. They block it to the safety, and then they get just some talent that goes the rest of the way. And then the very next play is the throwback to Edwards, and he drops a dime on Roman Wilson.
Just
A
incredible. Now, how would I mean, how every Michigan fan I'm sure thought about every single long bomb that our quarterbacks have missed when he just like
No, I
lays that
didn't.
in there.
I was just like,
He played
what can this
quarterback for
guy
West
not do?
Bloomfield.
What can he not do? He can
Yeah.
do everything. I mean, it's an amazing thing to unearth that guy like mid-season and be like, oh yeah, he's a complete badass at various things, because they were relying on him quite a bit. They tried to hit him for the wheel route that didn't quite work out. They got the angle route for their first, I think, first down of the game. So his presence in the backfield is, it's kind of tipping, leaning towards pass, but they did give it to him a couple of times up the middle, and he's obviously very competent at that. And I'm just really happy to see them use him in a way that, I wanted to see other guys, Chris Evans, used.
Sure.
And then, but other than those two plays, the first half was a slog. And part of that was the fact that Michigan kind of got caught in a field position battle, because AJ Henning fielded a couple punts that he shouldn't have. And so you're at the 3 on one drive. I think you're at the 7 on another drive. And Michigan is not doing anything that is remotely risky,
Yeah.
because that's the way Iowa gets back in the game. And I understand that. It was frustrating to watch live, but even as it was happening, I'm like, this is what you should do, because you're up 14-3 against Iowa, second quarter. Punting is winning here. And eventually they do get a first down on a swing pass, I think, to Edwards, right?
I'm trying to remember which one. I mean, it was a slog for so long. I'm trying to remember what got them out of it. There was another play after the two big ones, because there was a third big play that they had.
Well, that was the end around to
And
AJ Henning,
right.
where they used Edwards as a decoy
Yeah.
and went the other way, and they went to the boundary that time, which they usually don't. So that was, and then that was followed by the delay route where McNamara threw it behind all, and it deflected directly to the middle linebacker, who made it an incredible catch on a ball he could not have expected. And I was just really like, come
That
on.
was that was I mean the Iowa was growing, but like
Yeah.
getting
Well,
that
because if.
I'm sorry, just getting that big lead, like putting like pulling those big plays out early and using the McCarthy package early and using your by the way, it was the second running back throw of the game, because Iowa had tried one on their side first, and Michigan was just like,
Yeah.
no, here's how you do that. But I thought that was key, getting a lead on those guys, because then you could just chew away with try to move with Haskins 4 yards at a time.
Yeah, and that interception that they pulled off, that was after another chunk play. And if that delay route is on point, Michigan gets first down and they're knocking on the door of the red zone again. And if they score on that drive, it's like curtains, right? Like 21-3 is not happening. So that was extremely frustrating. And it must be said that McNamara had a rough game. So we didn't get to see a replay of this, but at some point, Joel Klatt's like, Eric All is wide open for a touchdown on this play, and he checked it down. And there was the interception, which was a bad throw, and there was just a lot of indecision. And to Iowa's credit, they blitzed a lot more than they usually do, and they were very clever about it. So there was the one where Michigan sets their protection, and then Jack Campbell immediately signals to the rest of the defense and changes the defense after the protection is set, blitzes, and gets in scot-free. And I was like, That's pretty good. I guess I can see why this is a pretty good defense. And
yeah,
you know, he had more pressure in this game than he had, I think, in maybe any game.
Yeah, that's fair. And it was all drawn up. And he was seeing pressure sometimes when it wasn't there, which is another credit to their pressure. He bailed on a pocket and almost threw an interception when they were down at the 7, I think, when he had all coming open, and he had no reason to leave that pocket. But Iowa was just kind of, the way they were using their linebackers was making him fear that he was going to lose a guy up the middle and not have time to get away from it. And credit to Iowa.
Yeah, when I looked at the stats in this, I'm like, okay, they don't really get to the quarterback very much. They don't blitz very much in the game that Alex did.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't going to be a situation where I feel like McNamara is going to be confused. He's going to be able to sit and survey and find his guys. I think Iowa probably looked at the same thing, and they were like, you know, if we're going to beat this team, we need to light up McNamara. And so they came in with a game plan that was unexpected just based on their season stats. And that was, I think, a large part of why he struggled. But struggle he did. And he's still a young quarterback. People forget that. This is his first full year as a starter. He's a sophomore, redshirt sophomore. But so he's a guy who's going to be vulnerable to the kind of things that Iowa's able to do because they're very tricky.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, Michigan pegged them back a couple times. There was that 3rd and 12 quarterback draw where, again, they used Edwards as a decoy. And then there was literally nobody in the tackle box except for defensive linemen. So that was Gattis with another positive call. And then the flea flicker, which was completely unnecessary, but I just advocated for at least one flea flicker a game in all games. So
I'm sure they heard you. And at that point they were getting up and they're like, well, Brian Cook is going to light into us if we don't run a flea flicker. So we'd better kind of get that out of the,
well, the last two, they did a really good job of not trying to conflict the safety, but trying to conflict a linebacker on it. And both mm-hmm. of them saw the linebackers bite up and have big chunks of room. So, you know, the ground game was pretty neutralized, I'd say, except for the long Corum run by the defense that was more aggressive against Michigan's ground game than Ohio State was. So...
I mean, UFR thing, but I think that their defensive end actually did a really good job against our tight ends. Michigan kind of wanted to run inside between the tight end and the tackle, and they were able to basically just force that guy out, and then they had 3 linebackers or 2 linebackers and a safety coming into that hole at the same time. Just didn't give Michigan a lot of options to run their power game.
Yeah, and their cornerbacks were much more liable to cross the line of scrimmage and get their hat on a blocker or even a back in the backfield. So that was a big difference between the Ohio State game, where Ohio State cornerbacks did not have an impact in that ground game.
Yeah.
And when Michigan has had a lot of success with pin and pull type stuff, counter stuff that hits the outside, and here Iowa's corners were really ready for it. So Michigan didn't really have a lot of profitable runs to the outside that weren't like gadget stuff like the end around.
They're also a really good tackling team, and that bit us a couple of times. Like, Michigan fans, I'm sure, when Corum gets the ball in space, and you're like, oh, here we go. And then, you know, their guy gets an arm and gets him down, and they were able to do that pretty consistently.
Yeah, there was one, like, 3-yard Corum run where it was like, okay, here we go. And then their safety was right there.
Mm-hmm.
And Corum didn't even have time to really give that guy a shimmy. He was in the box so fast, so... Yeah, I mean, whatever they're doing on defense is really good. And if they ever, like, fire Brian Ferentz and modernize their offense, it could be pretty good. But we'll get into that in the other section. Just woof. Luke Schoonmaker had a couple of the best catches of his career in this game with the one-handed stab.
Yep.
I think that was the wheel, wasn't it?
Was that a wheel? I thought that was the flea flicker. No, the flea flicker went to all.
Well, it was a wheel on the flea flicker.
Yeah.
And then McNamara's probably best pass of the day was hitting him down the seam for a contested catch where he had to go up between 2 Iowa linebackers and bring it down. And so we haven't really seen that much of that from him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's had some underneath catches, but he has not really been used as a vertical threat much, if at all. So, I mean, he's a guy who came in as a high school quarterback and is still developing as a tight end, but I'm pretty encouraged what we've seen from him lately and what we might see from him next year. especially because I think Eric All will be back too. So that's a lot of flexibility. That's a lot of ability. Yeah. It's a mixed run and pass if you're able to do that. And if, I mean, get the rest of this wide receiver core back, you add Ronnie Bell, like, pretty good. Receivers didn't really have a whole lot to do except catch a wide open touchdown from Donovan Edwards. Like, there was a throw to Cornelius Johnson that was just like, it's one of those ones that hits his hands, but he's at full stretch and you're like, yeah, it's catchable ish, but difficult.
He brought in the second one like that though, on a crucial third down. So
yeah,
I felt like Cornelius does that. He has a drop early in the game and then like later in the game, you're like, oh, you've redeemed yourself. Thank you.
Yeah, that has been kind of an issue. It's like, had a lot of opportunities to make catches that he hasn't quite brought in. And then when he does, like, he's really fast after the catch. He's absolutely torched some guys on double moves this year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like, all he has to do is get a little bit more consistency. And yeah, he could be a number one receiver. Just got to fight several other guys for it.
Right. Yeah, this wasn't really the game. We went to his game, but like, one thing I was doing when they weren't blitzing was just dropping into cover two and giving him a long time to read. And I think that he just wasn't ready to sit there for 5 seconds and pick it apart. Like, that's, McCarthy loves to do that, right? McCarthy is like, oh, I'm going to roll out and have some fun. And then, you know, at the end of this, I'll hit Carter Seltzer if I can. But that's not McNamara's game. He kind of gets, when he's just got to sit there and read what's going on in front of him for a while, I think he just starts getting sped up. That was the missed throw to All, and that was some of the other opportunities downfield that he missed. And, you know, the receivers don't have an opportunity to make plays if he's not identifying who's in single coverage for a while and just throwing it to them. So that is something I'd like to see them put more into the offense, especially on a team like this who could, you know, you score on one of those, they'll break their back.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look at the stats in this game, he averaged 7 yards an attempt, completed 2/3 of his passes. So even though it was very frustrating in the first half, like, I don't think that overall it was a terrible performance. It was just like,
no, it's just a McNamara performance. He is who he is, and I put a star on him because he's a problem for teams that have to do things like blitz all the time and have like a really good plan and have a really good defense that knows where to be all the time. Because, you know, most teams aren't going to be able to do what Iowa's defense does. That's why they're a good defense, right? And I mean, he struggled a little bit against Penn State. They're a really good defense too. He struggled against Wisconsin a little bit. Like, that's a really good defense. I don't mind him having, you know, especially because he wants to be safe with the ball. It's not a downgrade game for me on him. I think that he saw a tough defense. He reacted to it the way I expected him to. He didn't show a new ceiling. And I think that, you know, if we wanted to see him progress to the next level, then we didn't see that. But yeah, I'm not down on him, and I'm not down on the passing game because of this game at all.
Well, you know, I think it was a step back from what we had seen the past few weeks, and that's natural. There's going to be fluctuations up and down. So, but, you know, you mentioned this before, but I think getting those two big plays and immediately going for the jugular after the first touchdown, and Harbaugh said after the game that as soon as they were on the left hash after like the first four plays of the game, that's what they were going to run. Mm-hmm. And just that sequencing where it's like bang, bang, and now all of a sudden it's 14-3. And for Iowa, they didn't score a point the rest of the game, right? Yeah. So it allows you, when you get in that kind of slog area in the first half, to just put it under your hat and like out Iowa. And eventually, right, you know, they do that. But that's another segment. We're going to take a break, come back, talk about the defense.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing in one of our 3 convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com. It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, trying to collect sizes and payments for a family reunion, or, you know, ordering a whole bunch of shirts with your Kickstarter. Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with their easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, wasting time trying to sort out the order. They'll set it up. You can just sit back and relax. They'll even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit them at any of their convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirt.com.
At Peak Wealth, we believe we can help you retire with confidence. It's Nick Hopwood, certified financial planner from
Peak Wealth Management
in Plymouth. I graduated from Michigan in 2001 with an econ degree and founded Peak Wealth Management in 2014. Now we have over $240 million of assets under management. As a freshman in 97, winning the national championship in football and hockey didn't get any better than that. Both my wife and I lived in Bursley that year, and it's crazy because we never actually met while living in the same dorm. Probably because she had a car and I had to ride the bus. But we named our dog Bursley anyway, and he's on the payroll here at Peak Wealth Management. At Peak, we're fee-based. We're your fiduciary, which means everything we recommend is always in your best interest. We partner with leading institutional money managers, focus on low fees, to make sure every client has a financial plan covering retirement, college, tax, estate, insurance, and cash flow. Simply put, we are
Peak Wealth Management,
your comprehensive financial coach. Book your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
Under name, image, and likeness group licensing agreements, college athletes can now earn money. Still, the indirect consequence has many athletes chasing money, losing valuable study time for classes, practices, and games. As a group sponsor, you can offer a minimum of $100 in a one-time payment, or $20 or more per month on your credit card. Monthly payments by supporters, alumni, and season ticket holders of $20 or more will help athletes tremendously. Being a student athlete is not easy. It's hard. And until now, athletes were not allowed to work to make extra money while on a scholarship. On TeamFanClub.com, sponsors can make it easier for their favorite team or coach with a simple commitment to a group licensing agreement. Group licensing benefits all scholarship players, not just the starters. It provides fairness for all athletes who practice and train together for games. It provides security for players to stay at your school and not go into the transfer portal. Support student athletes today and sponsor a team at TeamFanClub.com.
During these challenging times, it is important to have a Michigan man in your corner. If you or someone in your life has questions, concerns, or just want to discuss your legal rights, give attorney Jonathan Paul a call at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com. John asks you all to be safe. We're going to get through this together. And as always, go blue.
You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up. You got to pump it up, don't you know, pump it up.
So Iowa averages 4.6 yards an attempt in the air, and Tyler Goodson averages 2.8 yards per rush, and that's all she wrote, really. You know, we talked about how bad this offense was going into the game, and it absolutely lived up to all of that, especially in the second half. Michigan went in and made some really nice adjustments to turn off the waggle stuff, mm-hmm. that I think they really should have seen coming. I was fairly irritated about that in the first half because I was like, guys, it's Iowa.
This is what they do. This is what they've always done. Yeah, like for 30 years, yeah. This is what Iowa's done.
And to their credit, their tight end did really sell a couple of those routes by staying in forever. Mm-hmm. Laporte is a quality player. And then early in the game, they get that switch route where Michigan is in zone and someone gets lost over the middle and they get that big chunk and then they get down into the red zone and Michigan holds up. and Iowa misses a chip shot field goal, and you can just feel like the air go out of the Hawkeyes because they don't get to do that very often. And then they turn to Alex Padilla for a spark, and he kind of emphatically does not give them a spark. Like, his stat line is amazing.
Yeah.
He completed 10 of 15 passes for 38 yards. So he's averaging 3.8 yards a completion.
Oh, well.
that's the sign of a guy who doesn't trust his protection, doesn't know what he's looking for downfield, and is just checking down.
Would you trust that protection?
Like, Well, no. I mean, I was extremely annoyed at Iowa because they built their whole game plan around not letting Aiden Hutchinson beat them. So The first few plays where they're out there, they're just cutting them. Mm-hmm. And they throw a fade, and they're cutting Aiden Hutchinson, which, one, you don't need to do that on a fade. but there was no read on that play, right? The pass play was, we're going to throw a fade. And there's only one receiver that this can possibly go to, and Petras was not nearly accurate enough to pull that off with any consistency. And I'm like, all right, you have a game plan where you're costing Aiden Hutchinson the Heisman, and for what? You scored 3 points. Just score 3 points and let Aiden Hutchinson take your quarterback's head off 3 times.
I mean, finally, he was jumping the snap because, like, he was so annoyed by it. And, like, that.
Do it for the culture.
Big Ten does not do that. He has to prove that they had a plan for Aiden Hutchinson. Well, good plan. I mean, Michigan had some drives too that they extended when they'd already kicked Iowa off the field, right? Like, they have Upshaw makes a silly goes and starts yapping at the quarterback. You didn't need to do that. And then there was another play where they threw a fade. The ball's going over the guy's head. He's not going to catch it. Dax is in good position. At the end of it, he drapes himself on the guy's shoulder, and it's like, well, A, it's going to get called 100% of the time, and B, the ball is already over your head at this moment. You don't need to do that.
Yeah, he didn't find the ball, and so he's panicking about what the result might be here, and I think that might be a little bit of an Ohio State hangover. We're against Ohio State. If that happens, you take that penalty, and you're like, we'll live to fight another down, and they'll be in the red zone, and we'll try to get them a stop there. Against Iowa, you really want to actually make Iowa try to make that play. So I kind of understand that. Mm-hmm. I think it's remarkable that the first defensive MVP of the Big Ten championship game was Aiden Hutchinson. Aiden Hutchinson's stat line in this game was 1 sack and 4 tackles. And they were completely right to give him the trophy, because Iowa's entire game plan is like, we can't let that guy beat us. And he still puts up a sack in one of the few times that they actually drop back, and he crushes a tackle back into Petras, and then he puts another tackle on his ass. And it's just, we do not have adequate stats for Aiden Hutchinson. Stats fail to encompass Aiden Hutchinson, and Pro Football Focus is really useful because they're grading every play. And, you know, Aiden Hutchinson had 2 QB hurries in this game.
And yeah, 7 pressures, I think they mentioned, though, when they were giving him the award, they mentioned 7 pressures in this game. So at least they were watching that. Yeah.
That if people are tracking that, then that should be a stat, because then you actually get some sort of indication about, like, what his impact is. And I think
each statistician is so different about how they reward those that it's almost a junk stat when you pull it all together. But in the context of this game, yes, it was something that you could look at and be like, this is how he was affecting the game, even if you're not seeing it in the counting stats.
Well, and Michigan brings out their 5-man front for a big chunk of this game. So there's this sort of chess match where Iowa is just setting downs on fire, because they need to make Michigan respect the fact that they're going to run a stretch one way so that they can run the waggle the other way. And they put some drives together doing that, but you just can't. It's like trying to build a car out of left turn signals. Like, if you only have one thing that you can do well, and the thing that you do well relies on your running back getting 2 or 3 yards every first down, it's just impossible to live like that. And I understand the decision-making that went into that process, because it's like, nothing else is going to work. But, you know, at some point you're just like, yeah, these guys just don't have it.
Yeah. How many 3rd and 7s were there in this game? I felt like every single down set of downs, like, it was run, 3rd and 7. Okay, now we're going to waggle. And as soon as Michigan shut that off, they just shut them off.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it was really nice to see some of Michigan's younger defensive linemen make some plays. Like Chris Jenkins made a couple of plays.
Mm-hmm.
Jalen Harrell made a couple of plays. Yeah,
he's interesting because they're using him as a linebacker and as a defensive end. So they were switching their entire set sometimes to like have him do the things that Michael Barrett does, and then he would come down and be a complete defensive end as well. And they were doing the same thing with Colson in like 5-1 sets. So they would have Colson go and be an edge player or back out into linebacker as well. So they were trying to show different looks with their fronts.
Yeah, and Colson had a blitz where he just drove the running back directly back into Petras. So he's obviously flashing. And one thing that Michigan did start doing a lot in the second half is they were going to blitz next to Hutchinson.
Mm-hmm.
So Hutchinson would take an inside route, try to beat him inside, and then he would get all of the attention, and then a linebacker or Dax Hill would zip around the outside, and Petras would have to be like, oops, gotta get rid of this.
Yeah, so there's that one play where like they actually stunt Mozzie Smith outside. And Hutchinson was coming, you know, right where Hutchinson was going to be standing. They're showing blitz on that side too, and then Hutchinson drops out. Both the linebackers drop out, and they got three blockers out there trying to stop Mozzie Smith from having him out from an edge rush. And I think that was a third down that they knocked him off the field again. Because once you've done that, you've used up all your extra parts on defense, on offense, on, you know, stopping this basically a non-threat. And you know, Hutchinson's not going to be a great pass protector, but that was some good play by McDonald to basically anticipate what they were going to do with Hutchinson and start using that against them.
And Chris Hinton, back to the defensive tackles and young linemen doing stuff, picked up a really crucial holding call that was him winning a pass rush and getting an obvious call that turned into a scramble because he was held. And then Rashawn Benny gets in this game and looks pretty solid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we have to grade on a curve here because Iowa's offense is obviously not very good, but he gets a couple of tackles late in this game, and his size and speed combination is like, all right, that's intriguing. So just for purposes of down the road, because I don't really know if there's anything. This felt, from the defense's perspective, like a early season Mac tune-up, where the most interesting thing is like what the kind of fringe players did and what it might mean for the future. And you don't expect that in a conference championship game, but this was one of the worst offenses in the country and showed, like, why.
Sure. And using Benny here and using Jenkins and using Harrell made a lot of sense just from a personnel standpoint. I don't know how relevant that's going to be based off of, like, who we're going to face at, you know, for the rest of the season here.
No, I don't think Rashawn Benny is going to see the field against Georgia.
Right.
But there's really not a whole lot else to talk about because Iowa was as bad as they seemed like they were going to be in this department. So that's how it goes. All right, we're going to take a break, come back, talk about some special teams.
Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, founder and president at Peak Wealth Management. We have a lot in common. We both went to Michigan. We're both huge fans, but I'm concerned about how much time you're spending on Michigan football recruiting. This could be time spent with me poring over your cash flow and Roth conversion strategy. How are these Roth conversions going to get done with you spending all your time and energy on MGoBlog looking at the next five-star recruits? Hey, all kidding aside, if you're addicted to MGoBlog and you want to outsource some of your financial planning to an expert, consider us, peakwm.com/MGoBlog. At Peak, we work with people in a variety of situations. Some of our clients are young professionals looking to optimize their savings and investments. For young people, time is the key. Some of our clients are super affluent trying to figure out when they can retire. Some are high net worth retirees looking for a second opinion on how their money's working for them. Get your second opinion at peakwm.com/mgoblog.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
The only thing we can be sure of about the future is that it will be absolutely fantastic. I'm thinking of the incredible breakthrough made possible by developments in communications.
Arthur C. Clarke's 1964 vision is now reality with SignalWire, a cloud platform that enables developers to build the applications that will reshape the future of communications.
These things will make possible a world in which we can be in instant contact with each other wherever we may be.
You can add cutting-edge, real-time video and audio to any product, website, or
application with APIs and SDKs for developers of all skill sets. SignalWire is optimized for high quality and low latency communication functionality, for video, voice, and text messaging capabilities.
Almost any skill could be made independent of distance. Men will no longer commute, they will communicate.
See for yourself at SignalWire.com. Use code 2021 and receive $25 in developer credit. Go to SignalWire.com.
SignalWire Communications OGs, original geeks of programmable communication.
It's painless. It's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing will save you time and hassle, whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion. UGP is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing down people to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out the order. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
Hey, so I have, like, insurance and stuff, but I don't really, like, know what's going on with it.
Yeah, your coverage probably sucks, and you're paying way too much for it. And I know this because I had a guy, his name's Phil Klein. He's actually a Michigan alum and wrestled for Michigan. He looked at my insurance and he was like, yeah, your coverage sucks and you're paying a lot more than you need to for it.
I also I hesitate to even mention this, but I do have my insurance from a company that advertises during college football games.
Well,
and I wish that was not the case.
Well, why don't you just get it from a cool guy who actually reads MGo blog?
Well, how would I do that? They have a website?
They have one of those, too. It's philklineinsurance.com. Can you remember the name Phil Klein?
Sure.
Can you remember insurance?
Yes.
Okay. Use those two together, and you will save money on your insurance, and you will actually get better coverage on your home and your auto, and they do life, too.
All right. So you're telling me if I Google Phil Klein Insurance, this website will come up?
Yes.
Wonders never cease. Jason, give me takes hotter than that one Iowa fan in the stands who was clearly swearing about a third down play call.
Do you blame that man? Do you blame him? That was
no.
He's absolutely right to feel that way.
He was very upset. And nobody's saying that he shouldn't have felt upset, but he was upset.
I mean, I was upset that Kirk Ferentz didn't punt when they were in the red zone on fourth down. I mean, that he totally broke character right there.
He thought about it. Yeah. He thought about it. He was like, how can I turn this into a punt?
Can I pooch it? Yeah, maybe.
Seth, give me your hottest take.
Michigan should remake the Big Ten trophy out of all the other teams' juice that they stole.
That's good.
So I want like a character jumping around. I want the chairs from Indiana. I want Seven Nation Army from Penn State. I want Ohio State winning things. I want like Iowa punting, like everything. Every single thing that the Big Ten had to offer, Michigan came along and they took it. And they just need to make the Big Ten trophy out of that now.
It's great.
Yeah, I like it. Yes.
Just like, oh, I'm sorry, we lost the old one.
If you want it to last 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, I didn't say it was a permanent trophy. It's a trophy that will probably break.
It's a placeholder.
Then you'll put it back together next year, and it'll just be really, really sad the whole time.
Oh, Brandy, give me your hottest take.
Aiden Hutchinson is a J.J. Watt-type talent that will make Detroit a great team again and perhaps a playoff team, except when Detroit screws it up by winning the last four games and he goes to Jacksonville.
You can't let him play for Urban Meyer Lions.
Urban Meyer is not going to stay there that long.
Yeah, Urban Meyer is not going to be that long. That's a good point.
No, are we taking bets if Urban Meyer is still in Jacksonville in 4 years? Come on.
Urban Meyer's going back to Florida, where he can, again, use his cheating powers to win. But, no, I do believe that now that we're seeing this right now, this kid is – he's that. Remember when we were watching, I don't know if you watched the Hard Knocks about the Houston Texans years ago. I was like, why am I even watching this? But the power of J.J. Watt in that town, I now, in watching just this run right here, I'm like, oh, yeah, this kid's got it. He's that. He's that, and he will be that. Just keep losing, Lions. Keep losing.
I find it interesting.
We don't, like, do we want him to be on the Lions?
No. Non-Lions fans don't understand the Lions. They think that they're an NFL team that like drafts good players and then get better. That's not what the Lions are. The Lions take generational players and ruin their careers and make you sad. That's what the Lions do. The Lions are playing right now, and no Michigan fan has watched
their careers are fine. They just don't give them a ring.
Yeah, but I'm going to say this. But this is what I'm saying. This is my hot take, is that if Aiden Hutchinson can put this team and transform the narrative of this team, which usually loses to Ohio State, after that Ohio State game, in our brains, we're like, yeah, we're going to win that, but then we're going to probably lose to Iowa in like the most Schadenfreude moment ever. And he is making me believe that we've got a shot in these playoffs. He is that type of a talent that he may be able to even change the Detroit Lions narrative. That's how good this guy is, and maybe that's my hot take overall.
That is hot.
Pretty hot.
Flaming.
Jason, give me your hottest take.
Donovan Edwards has a better touch on his deep passes than Joe Milton and Shea Patterson combined.
So, for real, like, dude got definitely targeted, and he definitely threw off his back foot, and he definitely didn't have what we call a great quarterback, like, mechanics on that play. But for real, like, why couldn't Shea Patterson do that two times in the Alabama bowl game? Why couldn't, like, for real, like, that's his first pass cold, like, while guys are closing in on him, there is no pocket, he's about to get jacked, and that guy can do it? I mean, it literally showed me how terrible Joe Milton is, and it showed me how disappointing. I'm piling on him, and it showed
don't pile
how,
on.
And it showed me how disappointing, and really, it shined a light on it. In some ways, it made me say that's what we needed in all this time. Like, we just needed a guy who could put a pass close. We just need a guy who could give our receivers a chance. I mean, you look at what Cade's doing, and there are certainly things where you're like, I wish he was better at this. But, you know, he put the ball where Studemaker could make the play, and he went out and made the play. He puts the ball where guys can make plays, and that's what Donovan Edwards did on his one pass that looked better than any of Shea Patterson's passes and all of Joe Milton's passes, all of them, including practice passes, including tape from his high school thing. Anything he's ever passed, if he tried to pass an exam, if he, you know, tried to pass on a girl, like, everything he overthrew. This guy did it, and it made me happy, and it actually made me proud of where we're at with our quarterback situation right now.
Kind of stole mine, Jason.
What? Sorry.
Mine was, if Donovan Edwards transfers, he could start at quarterback for half the Big Ten teams next year.
Yes.
Let's go down the numbers here. Indiana.
Yes. Yep. Illinois.
Nebraska, yeah. Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
Nebraska Iowa. Uses a running quarterback, too.
Iowa.
Iowa. Yeah, Iowa.
Northwestern.
Yes. Sure.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
I'm forgetting some other teams.
Wouldn't Kirk Ferentz put him under center, though? Like, aren't you kind of ruining him if he...
I guess everything's a wildcat.
Penn State, because Clifford's gone, and their backup is hideous, and they use a running quarterback too.
Yes. I mean, that pass was so good he could start for the Western Kentucky Hilltoppers, and they passed 75 times a game.
Yeah, no, he's
and my seventh amazing. One is Wisconsin.
Yes, yeah. He could. He's better than Graham Mertz. I mean, and
Ethel
also
Mertz is better than Graham Mertz.
Ethel Merman is better than Graham Mertz. No, I think Donovan Edwards could definitely start at receiver on any team, including Alabama. Like, I think he's that good of a receiver. Like that, just that little sort of like fake, like he was lackadaisically like heading on a little out, and then the turn up into a slant where he made the catch and got us a first down last night. I'm like, that's like pro level stuff.
I think we should respect Alabama's receivers, but one thing I was surprised about watching the SEC championship last night or yesterday was Josh Jobe is still starting for them at quarterback, at corner.
Mm-hmm.
Like the corner, guy that Shea Patterson could have beaten every single time. The guy who was always chasing Michigan receivers in 2019. Mm-hmm. Alabama has not found a replacement for that dude yet. Well, he's still getting beat.
And they lost Mechie, too. He's out.
Mm-hmm.
He's done.
So, yeah, they're probably down to 6 or 7 5-stars at receiver now. So
how
Ohio State's fourth stringer actually is who they're throwing it to.
Who was a 5-star?
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. You got to give credit to the way the coaching staff of Michigan has played these freshmen as a way for, I mean, even just for simple recruiting in the future. You want to get on the field, look at how many guys actually made an impact in important games. It's kind of amazing when you think about it. It really is.
Agreed.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you have Colson, Edwards,
Rod Moore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
All kinds of things going on. All right. If you would like some more Sklar Brothers, subscribe to their podcast, View from the Cheap Seats, hit up their Patreon, leave your hot takes in the comments of their podcast.
Yes.
And they will read them, possibly enjoy them if they are indeed hot enough. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, boys.
Great win.
All right, so this was like the Godzilla versus Mothra matchup of special teams, and Michigan won it decisively. Iowa misses a field goal, and they get a punt blocked. And they do offset that by having A.J. Henning catch a couple of punts where you're just like, what are we doing?
On the three.
On the three. What are we doing? But on the flip side, they had a very dangerous returner, and he ends up with a negative 7-yard return on his first because Robbins has excellent hang time and Michigan's able to get down there. And the punt block was not a fluke because Michigan was coming very close to many of these punts. Mm-hmm. There's just that kind of, oh, that you get from a crowd when they think a punt's going to get returned to center and it's not. That happened on 3 or 4 different punts. I was certain that they were going to get there. And then Cornelius Johnson gets his second of the year, I believe. So Jay Harbaugh, it's really nice when your nepotism hire turns out to be like the best special teams coach in the country. I mean,
indeed.
Iowa fans have to be looking at Brian Ferentz and being just like gesturing towards Jay Harbaugh and be like, huh? What? Couldn't you have been that guy?
There's a moment in this game because Iowa wanted a punt block too. They wanted one bad. They had like that whole like fire drill thing that they set up, right, where they line up all in a line, and then you know when you're about to punt, then they spread out into where they're going to be. And Michigan started moving guys around, and then Iowa would move guys around, and then Michigan moved around, and then we called a timeout, and then we came back, and we moved some other guys around, and they moved some other guys. It was like watching like two of the greatest punt aficionados just going head to head, like, okay, I'm going to get you. No, I'm going to get you. And then Robbins unleashed a rollout punt on that one finally, which is not something I remember him in his arsenal before.
Yeah, he got a 64-yarder off that because it didn't get returned. Mm-hmm. Although I think Jones left the game because he got hurt. His arm got hurt. So it was like their backup returner. And that was probably fieldable, but he decided not to, and it turns into a 64-yard punt. So, yeah.
And that was the moment that like Iowa's back broke, right? Like it wasn't even like not even the punt block, but like having that punt flip the field on them when it's just such a slog to get the ball down the field, and they're like, "Well, I mean, there goes our field position. Now what are we going to do? Drive the ball on them and score?" Like that was the way to beat Iowa, is to just out punt them.
Yeah, I know that, you know, Michigan ran a flea flicker up like 35-3, but it felt like the real win with cruelty part of this was the second half special teams evisceration, right. Where it's just like, can't, like, Iowa fans, you're like, yeah, you can't take that from us. That's the one thing that we have, but that's what they did. So they won with cruelty. And then, you know, I'm posting a murder otter halfway through the fourth quarter because Iowa's punted and they're down like 28-3 at this point. And I'm just like, I mean, that's, you're waving a white flag in a conference championship game. Like, go down swinging. You're not going to go down swinging very hard because you're Iowa in 2021 and this is your offense, but go down swinging. And then we had a targeting review, which was like, I was sure that Rod Moore was out of this game.
Well, that's because you're watching in slow motion. I mean, that is my thing. Like, if you watch that thing in real time, it looks like Rod Moore stops and then like leans into the guy as he's going down. And it doesn't look that, it doesn't look like he's trying to hurt him. It doesn't look dangerous at all. If you watch in slow motion, you see a slow motion helmet hitting another helmet, and we're trained to like think that that's happening in like a high speed. You always have to watch these replays in real time. I don't know if they do that when they're reviewing them, but the only reason that looked dangerous at all was because we're watching in slow motion. If you watch it in real time, it's like he stops, he's in position, the quarterback's head is going down. He's not really going for the head. He's just trying to like, you know, get him down. But another thing about that play is that was on a hold, right? So the flag's already out. Michigan already knows it's a hold. And I think the safeties kind of stand back. They're willing to let him run around a little bit in order to try to get the ball out. And I think both safeties were almost trying to create a fumble, possibly situationally. And I mean, if that's going to cause a fumble once, that's going to cause a targeting penalty once, I'd rather just not even bother.
All right. Well, Big Ten champs. Go Blue.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages approximately $100,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting U of M apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Passion for e-commerce.
Sell stuff online.
Security. Performance.
Conversion.
Beautiful user experiences.
Belle expérience utilisateur.
Monthly marketing.
PPC SEO.
Make your user a customer.
Conversion.
Eau de Parfum for online retailers. Love your website. Let Human Elements show you how. Available at human-element.com and find department stores, not find department stores.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homesure Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homesure Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homesurelending.com, that's H-O-M-E-S-U-R-E lending.com/mgoblog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me, kind of an annual tradition, Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
If you want to see where our post-game podcast happens, or if you need a spot to land in Ann Arbor, check out 4M, Prentice Partners' beautiful brand-new flagship property at 830 Henry Street in Lower Burns Park and across the bridge from the Big House. Their 11 spacious 6-bedroom, 6-bath suites feature state-of-the-art digital capabilities and are laid out for comfortable, efficient collaboration. You can also rent a 4M unit for shorter stays, say if you want to come to town for a football weekend. I want to add myself that they're also taking over Lucky's. We're really excited about their plans for that space. So if you're by the stadium, swing by 830 Henry or visit Prentice4M.com.
When it's time to party, we will party hard.
Potpourri segment coming up because there's no Jamie segment because there's only one Big Ten team that played. Two technically, but
one.
So the playoff field, as everybody already knows, 1 Alabama, 2 Michigan, 3 Georgia, 4 Cincinnati. Unfortunate result for Michigan, because if Georgia wins that game, we're probably looking at either Cincinnati or
Notre Dame.
Oklahoma State. Nah, Notre Dame wouldn't have been 3. And no disrespect to Cincinnati, but like, I think I'd rather play Cincinnati. one interesting thing about the field is if you look at the predictive measures, like Cincinnati is not some pushover that got lucky with one game and then went through the rest of the schedule. They're number 5 in SP Plus. So mm-hmm. 4 of the top 5 teams are in, and the one that's out is Ohio State. So I don't think that Cincinnati is going to beat Alabama, but I wouldn't just go in thinking this is like that Georgia Hawaii Peach Bowl that happened some years ago, or it was just a no contest from the start. Like, I think that's going to be a real game, especially because Alabama, they struggled against Auburn, they struggled against LSU, they struggled against Florida. They got outgained by a lot of those teams, you know. Mm-hmm. So they were able to turn it up for Georgia, but this is not like an Alabama team that had like one fluke loss against A&M and then would just trounce the rest of their schedule. They were very close to not being in this playoff, even with the SEC championship. So I would not like pencil Alabama into the final. And then Georgia, well, kind of like Iowa, except they have like the number 2 offense in the country, according to SP Plus. So they're kind of like them in one respect, and they have Kobe Dean, an incredible linebacker. They have Jonathan Davis, who's a 360-pound man monster. They're going to be a real challenge. And the line opened up, I believe, Georgia -7.5, which is big line for a team that has been performing as well as Michigan has this down the stretch here. So you don't really know what to expect. But I was a little surprised that it was so big.
Yeah, I think it started at 9, too, and Michigan fans already bet it down to 7.5, so it was even bigger than that.
I saw it open at 7.5, but,
all right.
Well, in any case. So, we haven't done our research on Georgia because we're taping this mere hours after they've announced the field, but we'll get into that next week. Over the time, we'll finish up here talking a little bit hoops and hockey. Hockey had a very weird weekend where they got a split against Minnesota and they got absolutely trashed on Friday night and then absolutely trashed Minnesota on Saturday night, a very strange game. And the problems on Friday night were mostly odd man rushes that they were giving up, far too many of those. And then Luke Hughes got walked for a goal. And I think Portillo didn't really have his best game. But it felt like Michigan controlled the play for long stretches, actually outshot Minnesota in that game. And then they come out on Saturday, they're down 1-0 on like four shots by Minnesota. They're out shooting them consistently, and then they just kind of open it up in the tail end of the first period. They go up 3-1, end up getting it up 6-1 before going up 6-2. And it feels a little bit like last year where they were so inconsistent game to game. And I think a lot of that is they give up a lot of odd man rushes. They're still very aggressive with their defensemen, and they should be. They're still working through those kinks in terms of like when someone plunges into the slot from the point, do the forwards get back and cover adequately? So far, the answer is some of the time. But
yeah, I mean, I tuned into the second game. I didn't even get to watch the second game because I was going to be trying to get the Big Ten stuff done, Big Ten championship game. But the first one, I actually tuned in late, and they were just chasing Portillo, and I was like, "Oh!" And I like it was. Michigan was controlling the play for that whole back period. They just couldn't get the puck in the net. But it was I was not expecting them to be able to. I didn't think they were going to be looking that much better than Minnesota. Like Minnesota was supposed to be the other team in this conference, right?
And yeah.
If Michigan can skate better than them and get up. I mean, I know it was at Yost, right? But it was a little weird night last night. It was like the second night. I'm sure a lot of Michigan fans were not there. So, you know, if they can get a split with them, you know, they're a younger team. Maybe down the line, like this team can really. That's kind of happened with Mel teams all along, right? They terrible in December and then go on a run when they have to at the end.
Yeah, they've got Notre Dame and Minnesota. They've played both those teams, and those are the only other two teams in the conference right now who are in the field, in the tourney field. Ohio State's currently 17th, so they're on the bubble, or just outside the bubble. So they're first in the conference by a point now, and they've got this Ohio State series coming up that they're going to be pretty shorthanded for. But, you know, 13-5 over the first part of the season, and really it's not 13-5, but it's what is it? It's 12-3-3 because they have three overtime games, one of which they won, two of which they lost. But functionally and pairwise, they're 12-3-3. And for a very young team, no matter what kind of talent they have, they've had an impressive first half, which will conclude next weekend. Then it's off to the part of the season that Michigan has already been very good at under Mel. They've had second half surges virtually every year because they're younger than everybody else and they get better faster. So I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully by the time the tourney rolls around, they have the aspect of some of those old Red Barons and teams. Not quite there yet, but getting there. Finally, basketball. Michigan picks up a crucial win against San Diego State. And I mean, for me, the takeaway in that game is that Frankie is the starting point guard.
Yeah, I don't know if he's going to be technically the starting point guard, but they're going to split minutes now, right?
They have to. Like, they don't have the athleticism when Brooks and Devontae Jones are the backcourt. Like, Jones has that floater, but the way Frankie gets in the lane, the assists that he was picking up, the kind of the leaping bounce pass to the shooting pocket for a Caleb Houston triple was just like, holy shit. And his ability to unlock defenses with his ability to drive and his, you know, fearlessness, like, yeah, he got packed at the rim when he tried to dunk it over a 7-foot guy, but that's why we love him anyway. So just gotta tighten it up at the free throw line, and I think he's your starter, maybe not immediately, but I know how I feel about the offense when he's out there versus how I feel about when he's not.
Yeah, it felt like X in that UCLA game when he kind of passed Eli and Jaron Simmons. And, you know, we knew that he wasn't going to be a shooter, and we were, you know, he hadn't played very well before. And then you get that moment. The other thing about Frankie is that his turnover rate has been really high this year. But when you look at those turnovers, a lot of them are, you know, dump-offs to a center who's not looking for it, or he tries something that he can't really pull off, but it's really close. The more he is the start, the more minutes he's getting out there with these guys, the more those are going to turn into easy buckets instead of turnovers, depending on who he throws it to. I mean, you know, Johns has been a little butterfingery this year, but that's something that is going to become a positive that's so far been a negative in his game.
Yeah, this game, I mean, he has such a thin statistical record right now that this game alone dropped his turnover rate 14 points. So the other major development was Caleb Houston looking more like the five-star he came in as. So he goes 4 of 5 from three, is able to get to the rim a little bit. Still not great in terms of supplementary things, but has a couple steals in this game and doesn't get taken advantage of on defense. And that's all you really need, especially if Hunter Dickinson is going to go 3 of 3 from three. That's a development.
Leads the team. Now leads the team in three-point percentage at 50%. So that's going to last, right?
Yeah, man. If that's a development, like, you could really play Dickinson and Diabate together, right?
Yeah.
Like, that becomes, like, a thing that you can do. And I don't think there's any question that Michigan looks pretty good with both of them on the court. I mean, Diabate only gets 7 minutes in this game because he's ill. And I didn't know this for most of the first half, and I was just like, where is he? Because Brandon Johns has the yips. Terrence Williams still kind of in the same boat, where he's just kind of a complimentary player. And if Diabate's out and you're doing some rotation, they had some weird lineups out there with like Seb Jackson and Terrence Williams and some odd stuff going on where just like, this makes me deeply uncomfortable, this lineup.
Yeah, the Zeb experiment didn't really go well. I mean, there were two possessions that he basically just threw away, one of which is like, Hunter is at the top of the key and he's 3 for 3 on threes right now, man. Like, we don't need your turnaround jumper. So, I mean, the guy hasn't played very much, so it's hard to just get on him for that. But, like, when he comes in and it's immediately a disaster and San Diego State immediately gets back in the game, it's like, ugh, dude.
Yeah, because they were up 10 or 12, and that lineup gets on the court, and San Diego State actually takes the lead late before Dickinson hits a three right before halftime. And then we don't see that lineup again, and Michigan essentially dominates the second half until it's KenPom time.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think Hunter had to play the entire second half. He had 39 minutes in this game. So I was noticing that they were not putting him on the line to try to rebound on free throws. Because I think they were just trying to save his legs as much as possible. But, you know, they really needed him because Diabate is done for the night. And then Johns is your other big, and he's really scuffling. So there were some segments in this game where it was like, who wanted the ball? And the answer was nobody. And a lot of them involved Brandon Johns.
Yes. It's, I mean, he did have one where it almost looked like they planned it, right? Because they're coming out of a timeout, and they swing the ball over to him on a skip pass, and he's got the three in the corner, and he puts it up, and it's good. He tried it one more time, and he was a little too strong on it. But, like, he just does not have the comfort when they get the ball to him at the top to put it up. And it you go from having... Because that's the payoff, right? The moment that they get the ball out to him, and he's got a free open shot... That's the payoff for somebody breaking into the lane or somebody breaking down the defense or getting a guy moving and they get the ball around and it gets to him and then you give it right back.
Yeah. So you swing it around the horn and it ends up in his hands and it's just like, he's got to take the shot. And so I feel like they told him that if he wants to play, he's got to take that shot. And, you know, 1 for 2 from three in this one, and that's what he's got to do, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're scuffling and you have an opportunity to take a standstill three-pointer, just take it. And, you know, what I would give for Shaundi Brown to come back to the university and just be like Brandon Johns' life coach.
Like, you're taller than this man. Put it up.
Yeah, well, they'll hit conference play coming up pretty soon. They got a pretty easy opener against Nebraska and Minnesota. So those will be, I want to say, must wins at this point. Like, if you want to feel... at all decent about where this is going, you got to start out 2-0 in conference play because it doesn't get any easier than that in the Big Ten. So, but it seems like they're finding themselves, and hopefully they'll kind of right the ship here and get after it. All right, have fun being Big Ten champs, kids. Don't drink too much. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I'm Seth Fisher along with Brian Cook. We took their punts! We took their punts!
You are Marina's day. 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 You are